friends. It's that time to find your balls. Jeff Stuckey here, riding shotgun. Hands on the wheel, Greg Allen.
Hey, morning, Jeff.
How are you, Greg Allen?
I'm doing great, man. Yeah. This is a good day. How about yourself?
So far, so good. I am overly excited about something, and I know that I'm overly excited about it, and I don't fucking care.
Okay.
So I was thinking that, like, little something that we could add to the podcast. Dude. And I'm, like, fucking giddy about this. Yeah. So, like, each episode, we should end with, like, a useful tip.
All right.
Right? Mm-hmm. Or maybe it'll be mid-session. I don't know.
Yeah.
Wherever it is, we'll identify it together, and we will call that useful tip the ball scratcher.
Oh, no. I knew it.
Is that... like, find your balls and, like, something useful is, like, ball scratcher?
Oh, because it satisfies.
Right, so. Yes, right?
Okay.
So, listeners, you get to look forward to your first, but certainly not your last, ball scratcher.
Okay, all right.
How too excited am I about that?
You're way too excited that... I don't even have any input.
I don't even care. I don't fucking care.
Yeah,
I think that's brilliant, and I'll die thinking that that was brilliant. So anyway, so we were talking pre-show.
Yeah.
We need like a technical term for that.
Back in the green room.
Yeah, green room. And perhaps the listeners know this. I would imagine they've picked up on it, that you have... and I think these are the right words, a profound aversion to small talk.
Oh, yeah. Like, I'm panicking right now. Can we?
I know. You're like, dude, how much longer for this senseless chatter?
Yeah, and I never know where it's going. Where's the map?
And it's so much fun to watch you freak the fuck out. But because you want to grow, you're going to try to... ease into making small talk.
Okay.
And you have something to offer this morning in the lane of small talk.
Oh, yeah. Okay, here's my first shot at small talk.
All right, here we go.
I need you to act like you care, otherwise I'm going to stop.
Cool, got it. I can do that.
No, this came up last week. Several things happened last week. Actually, they pretty much happen every week that would be... you know, craziness for someone else's life, but it's just part of my life.
That is true. You know, and the both of those are, it's not craziness, it's fucking craziness. You don't cuss, but his nonverbals communicated that. And it's continuous. The things that happen in your life are just, anyway, and so this would be one of those instances.
Yeah, and this is a minor one by my craziness standards. So my granddaughter and I are driving home, And I see a wheelchair on the sidewalk laying down. And so it doesn't surprise me because I see crazy stuff in our neighborhood anyway. Like I saw a wheelchair in a parking lot jacked up with a tire off. Like it was in the pit lane or something. You know, and just seeing them in parking spaces is weird.
I would have to concur.
I know. Another time I saw a gal sitting on the curb and I'm thinking, I don't know what she's doing there. But I sat next to her to talk to her for a minute. And I realized she couldn't move her legs. And then I see her wheelchair 20, 25 feet away. And I'm trying to put the pieces of the puzzle together. Like, how is her wheelchair over there? And how is she over here? But anyway, never figured it out. Didn't matter. We had a conversation. She didn't ask for help. I didn't want to act like she needed it. So I left. Oh, okay. But this time I see this wheelchair and I said, oh, man, somebody's pranking somebody. Like, oh, let's just dump a wheelchair here. And people go, I wonder what happened. The guy walked off. But it was laying on its backside, and behind it was a ditch. So after I get just a few feet past it, I'm thinking, maybe that's not a prank. Maybe somebody rolled down that hill backwards, and the wheels hit the curb, and they dumped them right there in the ditch. And I said, no, that can't be it. But I turned around to make sure, but...
No, that can't be it, but I turned around and make...
Okay. Well, here's why. I first started doing probabilities. You know, like, well, what are the chances that that happened or it's a prank? And if it did happen, what are the chances that the guy needs help or he just got up, walked off, said, I'm tired of that wheelchair? You know, so I'm working all that out. And I get down to like, well, there's probably, and this is a split
just
second.
How, out of curiosity, how many probabilities did you run in your mind? Like just a rough.
Yeah, three or four in succession. Okay. And it's split seconds, you
know. So that can't be it. Okay.
Yeah, so I landed on just a single digit percent that there's a guy laying in a ditch. But I still turn around. But unfortunately, I turned around before this thought came to my head. Here's a thought that came to my head. If I keep going straight, then I'm the guy that left a man in a, or a person in a ditch out of a wheelchair and drove past him. I'm that guy. And forever, I'll be a guy that drove past someone in a ditch that fell out of a wheelchair. And that was profound in my mind in defining moments in your life that you don't know. You know, it's not like you come up to a crossroads. Do I marry this person? Do I take this job or whatever that can be defining? That's just a random thing. But it seemed like it could trigger something pretty important. So I'm pleased with myself that I'd already.
I was going to say, I don't even know if I'm capable of having that thought. Like, if I do this, I'm going to be the person that left. Anyway, okay.
Yeah. So, yeah, I turn around and I go back. And first off, I see one of those neon yellow, like a cloth laying in the ditch. And I say, oh, man, this prankster really went all out. He took the thing off the back of the wheelchair and threw it in the ditch. Like, hey, this will really.
Now, did you, in your actual thought, what included the word prankster?
Mm-hmm. Is that not a word?
No, it's a great word. It is. It's just, oh, you little prankster, you. But that's cool. That's
all right. So there, go back, and there's a guy laying in a ditch right there, you know?
What?
Yeah.
I did not see this turn coming. Yeah. There was a guy laying in a ditch,
you know, and it was concrete curb and stuff, and his head's jammed up against it, and he's laying on his back, is on the sewer thing. And I said, dude, you know, what's up? And he kind of slowly opens his eyes, and I said, how are you doing? He goes, oh, man, my head hurts. I go, well, I think you fell out of your wheelchair. And so I grabbed his hand just to hold it for a second, and then he goes, my back hurts. So you're laying on the sewer grate. You know, we got to work this out. I said, but since you said your neck and your back hurt, I can't move you, you know, so we got to sort this out. So I didn't want to leave him, so I talked to him for, I don't know, 30 seconds or whatever, and then I see somebody walking in one of those, I call it the nursing outfits, like doctors wear.
Okay.
I don't know what that's called. But
scrubs-ish?
Yeah, scrubs.
Right? Scrubs, okay, yeah.
So I always assume that's somebody in the medical field.
It seems like a safe assumption.
Yeah, it's wrong.
Oh.
So So I go, hey, look, you know, there's somebody over here. Well, who is it? It's like, does it matter? It's a guy in a ditch that fell out of this wheelchair. What's his name? Look, I hadn't gotten that far.
Because if it's Ralph, I'm not coming over there. If that fucking Ralph, like, you just leave him in the ditch.
Yeah.
What an interesting question.
I know.
Well, who is it?
Yeah. So it's like, okay, look, I'm calling an ambulance. Oh, don't do that. I'll call his room number. You know, it's like, well, you know the guy? And so there was a nursing home right by, and there people are like, and they were out there actually on the porch, people on the porch. It's like, didn't no one see this guy rolling backwards down the hill or the wheelchair? I don't know. But anyway, we sorted it out.
Any more information than sorted it out? Like,
well,
what?
Here's the bad thing. So three more people in the garb came out, but they're standing over him. I'm thinking, oh, this is not how you handle this, you know? So I'm sitting down next to him, holding his hand, like, you know, we're going to get this done, guy. You know, we don't need people on cell phones sorting out who's in charge of room 629, you know? It's like, no, call somebody that can do something. So they need to know his birthday, you know. So he said his birthday, and I go, man, that's my wife's birthday. I said, but she's not quite as old as you and not nearly as ugly. And the guy, he squeezes my hand. He goes, oh, thank you, brother. Like maybe something to break the tension. I don't know.
Yeah, that was a high-risk joke. I mean,
that's what I don't know. I'm too awkward in that.
That's what we're talking about, right? So, yeah.
Okay. So, my go-to is like, let's go extreme. If you don't like me, then we solve this. We don't have to inch into it. Because I would have wasted a lot of time inching into the fact that you don't like me.
Hence your complete aversion to small talk.
Oh, yeah. Let's just go right in.
I mean, let's just. Drop your pants. Show me what. Well, I'll drop mine. Let's see what we're dealing with here. And otherwise, if that's offense, metaphorically speaking, of course. I mean, that's... Yeah.
You can't paint other pictures.
Okay. All right.
So anyway, we resolved that. I left him in good hands once I found out there was somebody that actually had some medical knowledge that could handle him, you know. But yeah, that's just one adventure.
Yeah. Okay, I'm going to give you... that's probably like a... It's tough. I'm going to go C+ on the small talk. And probably where I had to take points off was kind of that existential moment where you're like,
yes,
defining your character as a human being like that.
People don't need that.
No. I'm not saying, I'm just saying that the skill that we're working on is small talk.
Small.
Right.
Okay.
So if we could have like limited or eliminated the existential, like deep philosophical, then I think that was a solid small talk kind of story, just to like get people like curious and like, wait, what?
And then and maybe just understanding your ability to communicate, not your depth of knowledge.
Right.
See, I think I would understand it better. Small talk throws me. That doesn't have any picture in my head, but if we called it shallow.
Okay.
Yeah.
Okay. Well, then if that's the tweak that we need, it's just, I'm staying shallow.
Yeah. Okay. Well, that reminds me of the guys at the gym. One guy at the workout bench one day, a guy sits down and says, yeah, man, I think I'm going to have to get a divorce, you know. This is not working out. And the guy spotting him goes, yeah, man, did you see Tampa Bay Sunday night?
There we go. Right.
Like he was trying to get it. Let's get that's it on the right level.
That's
here,
what
man.
We do, man.
I'm spotting you. This
fuck
is
that vulnerability. No, dude, like, okay. I ain't here to hear about your divorce, man. Yeah. No. Okay. And oftentimes, you know, part of that does come just kind of out of our socialization and those, you know, vulnerable feelings. Mm-hmm. And so for men, especially with each other, man, we got to really fucking ease into that shit because it just is it. That story of the gym, like, I got to say something masculine right now.
Yeah,
what about those bucks? You see that? You know, like I got to bring the masculine level back up here.
Okay.
So again, final analysis, C+ for those reasons. Give us some feedback on that because I'm not good at small talk. In fact, I am abhorrent at small talk, and that is the occupational hazard of being a therapist. Like you get so used to asking people the question that they don't want you to ask. And then you go into a social environment and you're functioning. I mean, I spend a lot of hours in that part of my brain, right?
Yeah.
And then I go to some social event and I'm a few bourbons in, and then I'm like asking some childhood question or something. And it's like, and then people just scatter.
Typically,
I don't go to social events. I mean, it's just a good rule of thumb. But your tolerance for this whole organic small talk little experience, well done.
Okay.
A+ on that.
Oh, good.
Thanks. That was fantastic. So now you can draw us back to business.
So some important topics to talk about today, or I guess it's really one big topic. So we hear about guys, and we experience this ourselves with ideas of anxiety, depression, loneliness, and I just don't think we're understanding what it means or attacking it properly. So tell us about your experience with that and give us some insight.
Well, it's interesting because my orientation to that has done a complete 180. When I trained 20 some odd years ago, right? The it's called the DSM, Diagnostic and Statistical Manual, and it's what we diagnose from. So we had gone from the DSM-3 to the DSM-4, which was a huge, like it, I don't remember the exact numbers, I used to know them, but let's say tripled in size in terms of diagnostic categories.
Yeah.
And that was done under the guidance of a psychiatrist by the name of Alan Francis. And what our primary focus was at that time was what we called the medical model. And so we looked at things largely from the perspective, or at least this was my training. Other people in that time period may have had a completely different training orientation, but my training was more towards the medical model and high emphasis on diagnosis and then symptom relief, which sounds good, right?
Yeah. Like,
oh, you're having depression. Well, or you come in and you give me a list of symptoms and I say, well, that's what we call, you know, major depressive disorder, blah, 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 whatever. So that was kind of how I looked at things. Mm-hmm. You would come into my office and I would look at you through the lenses of a medical model. My primary emphasis was a diagnosis, and then it was almost purely symptom relief. How do we relieve your symptoms? And through the time that I have practiced, that has largely included a preeminent focus on medication. I mean, it's a, you know, we are a pill nation, and that is largely in psychological, you know, in that arena as well. And I'm sure there were 1,000 things that started to shift my orientation, but where I started to kind of, I started to be more curious just about my clients.
Mm-hmm.
Rather than diagnosing them with a disorder, you know, this is social anxiety or post-traumatic stress or obsessive compulsive disorder or whatever that is. How long have you been having this? What are they associated with? You know, and when you say that out loud, it's like, well, yeah, no fucking shit, you know,
right,
that kind
right.
of stuff, right?
Yeah.
But the emphasis prior to that was so much more on just diagnostics and symptom relief. Well, then I kind of started wandering off into Buddhism and more Eastern orientation and some individuals that were starting to move their practice in that direction. And the value of emotion, feeling the emotions, experiencing your emotion. You know, if you're feeling depression, you know, if you're having some depression, then feel it. Don't judge it, right? Meaning this is bad. I shouldn't be feeling depressed, but okay, I'm depressed. What? I'm going to let myself feel this. I'm going to experience the discomfort, right? Because the discomfort actually has a purpose, right?
Yeah.
I mean, if something's uncomfortable, what then should you do?
Yeah.
Fucking change it, right?
Yeah.
I mean, if you got a rock in your shoe, it's uncomfortable. What do? You take the goddamn rock out of your shoe, right? It's not rocket science, but somehow in our treatment, like we just, it's like, we don't need to take the rock out of the shoe.
Yeah.
We just need to give them like some morphine or something.
So they don't feel the rock.
Right. Yeah.
Oh,
like,
God.
Right.
Yeah.
And that sounds like even saying it out loud, it's like, damn, man, I don't know if I'm supposed to, but that's literally what it was. And so so then I start to go through this and I kind of start, oh, well, fuck, I probably ought to deal with this myself, experiencing my own emotions. And like we've talked about, those vulnerable emotions, right?
Mm-hmm.
Depression, sadness, insecurity, you know, but all of these different kinds of things just got lumped into, no, those symptoms, that's depression. And what's it's always been interesting to me is to be defined as clinically depressed, there's 9 symptoms, and if you have 5 of those 9 symptoms for a period of 2 weeks,
oh no,
you're clinically depressed.
Oh wow.
I mean, if IU loses a basketball game, I'm depressed
right.
for 2 fucking weeks, man. Like that takes me like forever. Like it's like,
what the fuck? Like 2 weeks, you don't get over anything in 2 weeks. Like, what are we even talking about here? So then that just kind of really started. And I've always, as we've talked about this before, man, I have like anxiety. Like, I am great at anxiety. Mm-hmm. Anxiety and catastrophic thinking. Like, I got the, man, I can fucking do that shit.
Okay.
And you've heard some of my catastrophic rants, which are enjoyable, but do tend to come at a high emotional cost. And so exploring that and fixing some of that thinking. And it's like, okay, so I'm not looking at any of this right. And so I need to get away from or not lean so heavily on this kind of medical model.
Right.
And be much more curious about the emotional experiences of my clients and then empower them to be curious about it as well.
Mm-hmm.
And so when you think about, like, so now when I think about depression, anxiety, and I think diagnostically, right, it's like, I don't even know how useful that is. I mean, it's useful in terms of filing for insurance reimbursements, but otherwise, you know, I don't know how useful it is to think in terms of disorders. I know, and I'm not saying that there's not utility in that. There is. There are people who, you know, there is such a thing as major depressive disorder. There is chronic anxiety, chronic depression, those kinds of things. I'm not saying that there's not. I'm just saying that in that expansiveness of our diagnosis, it just needs to be contracted, mm-hmm. right? And so then you also pair that with our fucking infatuation with happiness.
Yeah.
I mean, are you fucking kidding me? Yeah. Like, what is the, why are we like, you got to be fucking happy all the time.
Mm-hmm.
And then as a therapist, you know, it's like, then you got to be like, even a step above that, mm-hmm. like, because you're a therapist, right?
Yeah,
oh, yeah, I'm fucking happy all the time. It's like, fuck you. I'm not that happy all the time.
Yeah.
I mean, I don't know what I am, but I'm not like fucking giddy happy all the time.
Well, I mean, if the whole idea of us, I mean, there's going to be pain and suffering in the world. So I see it as a big thing is we're managing loss. So we're losing at various things at various rates. some are big, some are just little things, you know? So we're managing that. So I would think a healthy state would be, are you managing that well? You know, not, is there no loss in your life?
Right. Yeah. And I think that's, Greg, you have earned the ball scratcher of the day.
Oh, no, I didn't want to be the first.
No, that's good. Because that really a better indication of my overall wellness would be how are my circumstances affecting me?
Mm-hmm.
And how much am I controlling that effect and how much is that effect controlling me? But it's like when you put that, you have to be fucking happy all the time on us, right? And then you also put like mental illness, you know, like that stigma of mental illness, and that is shifting, you know, we're moving away from that perspective of mental illness and talking more about mental health and maintaining mental health, those kinds of things, which I think is a fantastically positive shift in the right direction. I don't think it's the only thing that needs to occur, but that's to get rid of that stigma, because who wants to admit that they're like,
yeah,
hi, I'm Jeff, I have a mental illness.
Sign right? up for that category.
Right. And so then we will indirectly neglect our mental health. And so it's all of those different layers. It's like this diagnosis thing that says depression is just pathological, that anxiety is just pathological. And if you have one of those, then you're mentally ill. So you don't want to acknowledge that, right? Because you don't want to say you're mentally ill. And so then you end up indirectly neglecting your mental health. And then you got to be fucking happy all the time. And what I would tell you from that creates an epidemic of loneliness. Because all of us are walking around with these stupid fucking smiles pasted on our face. And when someone says, "How are you doing?" what is your automatic response 100% of the time?
Fine. I'm doing fine.
Fine. Just fine. Right. And that's what I mean by loneliness. It's like there's no sense of any deviation from that path. And it doesn't matter who it is. You know, it's like we just fall into that. It's like, "How are you today?" Fine. It's like, meh, not so much. And it's tough because I try, like, you want your therapist to always be in a good mood, right?
Okay.
You know, it's like when people ask me how I'm doing, I know what answer they want, right? Yeah. Oh, great. Had a great morning. Had a, you know, good positive mental attitude, shit, whatever. Mm-hmm. And so in that, there is an attempt on my part to, and this is what's difficult, is you don't want to overshare, right? Mm-hmm. Because they're there to talk about what they want to talk about. So it's like you don't want to drop some fucking heavy thing on them, and then the entire session they're thinking about, "Oh, well, I don't want to put any more weight on that." Yeah. But at the same time, you also don't want to perpetuate this notion of being fine all the time.
Mm-hmm.
And it, I don't know how well I do at managing that. It's just something that I try to keep on a conscious level, and, you know, it can vary from client to client, those kinds of things. But when you compound all of those things, right? And for us as men, our socialization to avoid vulnerable emotions, then right, we're not going to do mental illness, right? Fuck that.
Yeah.
So what do we do? Like, we do addiction great and we do suicide great. That's ultimately what ends up happening, is that we have to numb the pain, which preeminently is the pain of loneliness. So we find, you know, we work ourselves to death. Yeah. We drink whatever it is,
yeah,
you know, whatever that thing is in my life that's totally fucking out of balance,
yeah,
is my anesthetic. And then for men don't talk about suicide. They just do it. And it tends to be, you know, we tend to control for the variables. You know, we like the more violent forms that are just gonna put an end to it, because we just get, and this is something that I have learned over time with my clients, is I used to be one of those guys that thought, well, I'd never kill myself. Like, you know, of course I wouldn't kill myself, right? And I think that's what we would all, you know, everybody, 100% of the people say that. Like, no, I don't do that. But one of the things that emerged over time with me is some of my presuppositions about somebody that was having suicidal thoughts versus how it actually occurs. Because when someone is, in my experience, when someone is suicidal, there is a perfect logic for it. There's a series of events. There are things that have happened that have made killing myself the perfectly logical next step. And, you know, the last person you're ever going to tell that you're going to kill themselves is your fucking therapist. Because we'll lock your ass up.
Yeah, right.
We're like, "Greg, can you stay here for just a minute? I'll be right back."
Yeah.
And then I'm calling the white coats. Yeah. Got me a jumper here.
So it's not a random thing, or somebody just goes off the deep end or something. It's like they've thought through it.
Yes.
Okay.
Or this series, and I'm not saying that there's not exceptions to this rule, but in my experience, especially with working with men, and I could tell you easily 50 conversations off the top of my head, and guys that you would be like, "Oh, that dude's got his shit together."
Mm-hmm.
Right? And in many ways, he did have his shit together. But that loneliness and that desperation behind it, they would start, once I started to become more curious about, one, okay, let's talk about this.
Yeah.
Like, you got to be able to talk to your therapist about this. And entering in and being curious about whatever that logic is, whatever those circumstances are that sequentially got to that, you're not, there are exceptions to this, but in the majority of my experiences, this isn't a lunatic. It's like when you hear them lay that out, it's like, oh, fuck. I don't know, bro. I mean, I'm not. I can totally understand that.
Yeah.
And it there is a connection there to where you, at least for me, where it's like, oh, I could fucking see myself doing that. I could, and it didn't take long for me to go from, I would never do that to, oh, I could totally fucking, I better like, you know, I better make sure I got my buffers in place because I could, especially with the way that my mind works and that catastrophic thinking and that shit. And it, so especially for men, because that's, you know, who we're talking about, I think we desperately need a reconception of mental illness, anxiety, depression, those kinds of things. And we have to come to a recognition that all emotions are useful. And all emotions tell us something. Now, it can be that emotion is telling me false thinking, mm-hmm. right? Because that's something that I have to do a lot of work on because of my catastrophic thinking. It's like I can turn the best situation into a pile of shit in a fucking hurry, right? But if I had not sat in my anxiety and spent some time feeling the discomfort,
mm-hmm.
then I never would have reprogrammed those thoughts. Mm-hmm. And those thoughts absolutely conditioned the way that I looked at everything.
Mm-hmm.
Everything. There was no escape from it. Everything was like going through those lenses. And then once I was able to see the defectiveness of the thought patterns and be able to change them more in a more sort of way, because I was pretty much, my thinking was usually victim, right? Oh, fuck, man. That's not fair. Why is this happening to me? Like, which puts me in a position of powerlessness, right? I have nothing that I can control. So that then just causes my anxiety to get even worse.
Mm-hmm.
And then the more helpless that I feel, the less that I try to make changes, try to confront problems, all of those kinds of things. So it's just perpetually escalating my anxiety.
Yeah.
But then when I'm able to engineer some of my thinking to where it's like, okay, it is a problem. It's not a statement about who I am or a statement about how the universe feels against me. It is a problem. And I can solve that problem, or I can get help to solve that problem. Then all of a sudden it changes everything.
Yeah.
And so, but again, my point being, if I don't camp and spend some time in that anxiety and start to understand that, I don't ever come to that discovery.
Yeah.
If I don't sit in my depression and think about why am I depressed, not, oh shit, I shouldn't be depressed.
Right.
Oh my God, what the fuck? Is this depression? Oh my God. And so a lot of my thinking, right, this conception that we've created about mental illness and all of that, it's like if I feel a little bit of depression, it's like, well, then I get depressed because I'm feeling depressed, and then it becomes a self-sustaining cycle.
So we got to get guys to go ahead and sit in that and say, okay, I'm having these feelings.
And it's okay.
Yeah.
It's okay to have this feeling.
Yeah,
it's okay to not be fucking happy
24/7.
Yeah. So as soon as we label it as bad, we try and push it out.
Exactly.
Yeah. Okay.
Again, because that largely goes back to that mental illness stigma, right? I don't want to be fucking mentally ill.
Yeah.
Like,
yes.
It's like, and I, that most of us are that way, right? It's like, well, we want to push that away. I'm not weak. I don't have any of that.
Yeah. And depressed doesn't sound very powerful.
Right. Right. And moving those things out of just the purely pathological and saying, okay, this is useful.
Mm-hmm.
You know, what, I mean, if I hadn't sat in my depression a little bit, I'd still be married. And it was not a good marriage. I mean, it wasn't a good marriage for her. It wasn't a good marriage for me. It was, we were both depressed for damn good reasons, right?
Yeah.
So. And being able to say, okay, this isn't good for either one of us.
Yeah.
And we have beautiful, brilliant children that we can love and support and be wonderful parents to, and we can recognize that marriage is not what we were designed for.
Mm-hmm.
And we don't have to hate each other. We don't have to fuck you and fuck you and you liar. You said till death. Like, we don't have to do that. We can just acknowledge this and then we can move into something else. That reconception in terms of the men that we have worked with has had unbelievable results.
Yeah.
I mean, unbelievable results. The way that I practice now versus the way that I practiced 15 years ago are almost categorically exclusive of one another. And I am very proud of the work that I do now because of the effectiveness.
Yeah, absolutely.
And it's an experience that we can all have. We don't have to be afraid of our emotions. We can feel the shit. We can deal with it. We can seek comfort. We can do all of those kinds of things.
And you mentioned something that I think was pretty key. You might have gone over it. It's worth going over it again. So when you ask a guy to explore those emotions so that you can, like, you're drawing information for yourself to help him, but the idea is you want him to be able to sort that
exactly.
out.
Exactly.
Yeah. So when he's not sitting in your office, he's still out there saying, wow, that is an emotion and that's okay.
100%. It is preeminently for the client saying it's okay to come into this space.
Mm-hmm.
It's okay to feel what you're feeling. It's uncomfortable, but the discomfort has utility. It's telling us something that we need to change in the system.
Yeah.
And let's explore that and let's make that change, whether it's a cognitive change, the way that you process the information, or it's a behavioral change, you need to get a fucking divorce, you know, whatever that is. But it's useful. It does need to be relieved, right?
Yeah.
It's uncomfortable,
yeah.
This ease, for a reason.
Yeah.
But let's find that reason.
Yeah.
Let's not just jump to relieving the
symptoms.
Dis-ease.
Yeah.
Let's relieve it in a way. Let's use an antibiotic. Let's not use morphine.
Yeah. Wow. I think that's great. I think we've got our tip for the day.
Our what?
I forgot what you called it.
Are you talking about the ball scratcher?
Okay. All right.
Did you call it a tip?
You know, like the useful.
That's the wrong part of the.
No. Don't start with that. I'm saying it's like a
it's
useful
not the tip, it's piece the ball. Of information. The balls.
No, stop. It's a useful piece of information to take out and do something.
That's the Greg Allen version of it. Useful piece of information. So from now on, it will be referred to as a UPI. And we'll have like some kind of fucking form that says UPI, and then you have to fill out the today's UPI. It's a ball scratcher, Greg.
Okay,
you're
thanks.
Just going to have to.
Got it. Satisfied.
I'm getting that on a t-shirt. And every time we record, I'm wearing my ball scratcher t-shirt.
You know what time it is, Jeff? It's time to thank our producers.
Time to thank our producers.
Eric and Justin.
Yes, they are absolutely the brains of the outfit.
Oh, yeah.
To whatever degree it looks like we know what we're doing. They are 100% responsible and just fucking fantastic guys.
I know. Wealth of information.
And just like fun, man. And I don't know how to say that. I'm not the easiest person to hang out with.
That's how you say it.
Is that the right way?
That's perfect.
Nailed it. Okay. And, but man, hanging out with those guys is just like a fucking blast because they're just great guys and like a wealth of information. I don't know. It's just easy. It's cool. Yeah. Anyway, shout out to Justin and Eric.
Speak and Tell Studios.
Speak and Tell Studios. The wind beneath our wings.
That's right. And we also want to ask guys to subscribe to our Facebook page.
Yeah.
Is that right? Or to the podcast.
About both.
Yeah.
If they want to do both.
Do them both.
Yeah.
Give us the 5-star rating.
We know that first step in finding your balls is hitting that like button and giving us the 5 stars. So, we good?
Yep, that's good. Thank you, Jeff.
My balls feel scratched, so that's a successful podcast, and we'll talk to you next week.